This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Here's a hint as to where we are today. That's right, Vegas, baby. The local economy and national politics on the broadcast today from American Public Media. This is Marketplace.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From the studios of KNPR in Las Vegas, Nevada, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Friday, the 3rd of February. And we are calling our election coverage this year, as I think I've mentioned, the real economy, what actually matters to people, their future and their prospects. So here are the headlines you need to know about Nevada. The unemployment rate here is 13%. In Las Vegas, one of every 14 homes, more than 7% of them, are in some form of foreclosure. And a day before the Nevada presidential caucuses, one of the best hopes for something new in the Las Vegas economy rests with a guy who sells shoes for a living. We'll get to that last bit in a minute. But the real economy, you can't get much more real than what we found up in North Las Vegas, about 20 minutes from the Strip. Although, I got to tell you, seems a whole lot farther.
Here we are standing in front of a foreclosed house. This being Las Vegas, there's no grass to be brown in front of a lot of these houses, but the pebbles are brown enough. It's a gravel front yard.
Lori Galarza is our real estate agent. She's given us the loneliest house tour in the world. And if it sounds quiet and sad, it's because it is. Every city has foreclosures. Las Vegas has them by the neighborhood full.
Lori, tell us what this place is. How distressed is it?
Okay, we are looking at, 10 days on the market, 1,700 square feet, 7,400 square foot lot, priced at $99,000, $58 a square foot.
And when you say distressed, you mean?
You know, usually if you want to look for telltale signs, I mean, this one, I mean, you don't see weeds growing up in the front yard, so it doesn't look like it's been vacant long.
The house across the street is a different story. Smashed windows, weeds, the whole foreclosed house stereotype going on. And then I looked in the window.
Is it trashed?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my.
And it does not have a for sale sign out front, so it could be one of those houses where
it's been empty for a long time and got broken into.
That it's if it's foreclosed or not foreclosed yet.
Yeah, oh, no. There's people came in and did damage to that house.
Oh, let's see.
Yeah.
Holes smashed in the walls. The toilet has been ripped out and cracked into pieces.
Oh, my God. Now, this is not typical, which is interesting.
No, of course.
Yeah, but you know, you're going to get this angle of it, too, that this is what happens when, you know.
Right.
Which is unfortunate.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I think most Americans would be surprised at how staggeringly bad it can be.
Elliot Parker is a professor of economics at the University of Nevada at Reno.
California, for example, has housing prices still are above where they were in, say, 2000. And we're currently about 30% below, adjusting for inflation, any place we've been really since 1975 when we started keeping records. That is, we've never seen housing prices this low in Nevada.
You know what they call that, right? It's a buying opportunity. And that's what keeps Lori Galarza optimistic and busy.
We are going to go to my listing that I just put on the market yesterday. It is not a distressed property. It is a seller selling. And I'm going to show you, it's a lovely home, and we've already got two offers on the house.
Those offers, not usually from the family moving in from out of town. Investors, Lori says.
You say investors, other people say speculators.
Right, okay, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that.
Oh, come on.
No, I mean, when we are talking to folks, I understand that perspective, but you know, there's going to be, I'm sure, speculators in every type of market.
Not ideal, but in a market like this, a sale is a sale. But when I ask her how she's going to know things are really getting better?
We know that things will start to stabilize when the locals are buying the majority of the homes and not investors. So I'm completely optimistic. Again, you know, whether it's my nature or whether it's just being here and seeing the interest that we have in our city, but we do have a lot of interest in the city, and I still see people who want to live here. So, you know, I'm one of them.
There's a real sense in Las Vegas that it needs something else, something more than just gambling and hotels to get housing and the whole economy going again. And that's where the guy selling shoes comes in. Tony Hsieh is the CEO of Zappos. He brought a couple of thousand jobs with him when he brought his company to town 8 years ago. But more important for Las Vegas right now is what he's doing with his money. $350 million from his own pocket to revitalize downtown Las Vegas. First of all, yes, Las Vegas has a downtown. It's a couple of miles north of the Strip. Hsieh's going to move Zappos headquarters there to the old City Hall building. It's right around the corner from a condo building he leased out a couple of dozen apartments in for him and some of his top employees.
Going up. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, I'm Zach.
Zach Ware is in charge of making a lot of the downtown stuff happen for Hsieh. We get the tour. There's a media room and a room with live plants on the wall. Yeah, I don't know about that either.
I just missed the most important room, which is the closet that has all the Razor scooters in it. So.
The whole point, though, is to create an environment that keeps employees and their families near each other, working and living in the same urban space. Thing is, the downtown Las Vegas urban space is pretty bleak.
So let's look out the window.
Let's do it.
And we have a parking structure. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm going to stop counting vacant lots.
Mm-hmm.
There's a 7-Eleven.
I see it differently. One of the greatest things about downtown Las Vegas and one of the most challenging things is that in most urban revitalizations, you have a bunch of empty buildings and you can bring a coffee shop in a matter of months.
Yeah.
In downtown Las Vegas, there's a lot of empty land. So our team has set about to try to help create the city physically.
Tony Hsieh and I sat down in one of the new businesses he helped bring to the neighborhood. It's called the Beat Coffee House.
It was almost too good to be true that City Hall was two blocks away. And when we first learned about the opportunity, we actually surveyed our employees and said, oh, we're going to build our dream campus. So give us suggestions for what you would like to see in a dream campus and come up with anything. Sky's the limit. And our number one request was actually doggy daycare.
Wow.
And so we went through this process. But as we were going through the process, we realized that these campuses for Nike, Google, Apple may be great for their employees, but they're actually very insular, and that doesn't really integrate or contribute to the community around them. What if we took more of an NYU type of approach where the campus kind of blends in with the city and you can't really tell where one begins and the other ends?
Which is great, except there's nothing here.
Well, except there's...
You got a coffee shop, right?
But we've got a coffee shop now, and we've got a number of bars and so on for employees to interact with each other at night. And so the plan is by the time we move, it'll be closer to 2,000 employees moving. You know, that alone could be 10 to 20 million a year just into the local bar economy.
You've got a whole lot of your own money in this, hundreds of millions of dollars. What's your upside?
I guess, you know, from a selfish perspective, it's just, I live here, I live a block from here, so I want to help create the neighborhood I'm going to be living in. From a business perspective, on the Zappos side, we believe that if we invest in the community, invest in the ecosystem, that's ultimately going to attract and retain more employees, so it's going to pay for itself in the long run. So it's one of those things where it's just a win-win for everyone.
You and I spoke out at Zappos headquarters 2 years ago about the company and your role in building that company and the culture out there. It strikes me that you are more invested in this project than you are in Zappos. Not in terms of hours per day, but you've got a passion for this. This is something that has struck some chord in you.
What we're doing collectively downtown, and it's not just Downtown Project the company, it's not just Zappos the company, it's really the whole community. What we can do together is actually probably the most important thing that I can be doing for Zappos right now, because if we get this wrong, it's a 30-year mistake that we can't recover from.
Zappos CEO Tony Hsieh in downtown Las Vegas yesterday. All of our election stories from The Real Economy, our special coverage, are online at marketplace.org. On Wall Street today, the happy music when we get there.
In terms of the economy, while I hope for the best, I expect the worst.
The economy gives me a bleak outlook on education right now and my life.
The biggest challenge facing the economy is a crisis of confidence.
I think the economy needs a new direction and some good leadership to turn things around.
That was Ashley Brown and Stephanie Herrera in Henderson, Nevada. Jeffrey Lawrence here in Las Vegas and Joseph Lopez also in Henderson. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, in response to that last line Joseph said about turning things around, it might actually be happening, because we got some good economic news this morning. It came in the guise of the January unemployment report. Last month, for the second month in a row, American companies created more than 200,000 new jobs. Calling it an economic head of steam might be too strong, but it is pretty good. From Washington, Marketplace's John Dimsdale has the details of a jobs report that was better than expected.
Last month, companies created over 250,000 new jobs, the fastest pace in 9 months. Unemployment dropped 0.2% to 8.3%, close to a three-year low.
Across the board, just about every key aspect in the report was solid and better than expected, so not really a weak spot in the report among the key details that we most closely follow.
With these numbers, Morgan Stanley economist Ted Weissman says forecasters could raise their predictions for economic growth this year.
We've gotten some definitely more encouraging results over the course of the past week with this employment report, plus pretty solid initial indications for January retail sales and much better than expected auto sales.
In fact, manufacturing companies were responsible for 82,000 new jobs over the past 2 months. Chad Motre is chief economist at the National Association of Manufacturers. He says orders for new products are strong.
This really shows that there's definitely a rebound starting to take place in manufacturing. We're seeing a lot more activity in recent months.
Even better, revisions added another 260,000 jobs to last year's tally, and the number of hours worked in January continued a steady climb. Hourly wages were higher. Economists are using terms like super, exceptional, and even game changer to describe today's report.
Okay, hold on a sec.
Mitchell Hartman, what are you doing? Don't tell me you're going to try to rain on this parade.
Well, yeah, John, I figure for every silver lining, there's got to be a cloud. So I'm here to bum you out.
Uh-oh.
Well, there is continued lousy news buried in this oh-so-upbeat employment report.
The report's starting to tell kind of a tale of two cities.
That's George Wentworth of the National Employment Law Project.
The average length of unemployment for an American worker is over 9 months. There's still way more unemployed than there are available jobs.
And it's been getting worse in the last year. It's especially bad for older workers, says Carl Van Horn at the Rutgers Center for Workforce Development.
Their skills tend to atrophy. They are less valued by employers. They don't want to train them. They're worried they're going to not get much of a return on investment if they do train them.
Which is why the over 50s average more than a year on the unemployment line. And for all the super exceptional game changer stuff John heard from the economists today, with clouds continuing to hover on the economic growth horizon for the rest of 2012, this level of job creation might be as good as it gets. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
The world's biggest breast cancer charity did a very high-profile about-face today. After a three-day media and internet uproar, the Susan G. Komen for the Cure Foundation said it's not going to cut funding to Planned Parenthood as it had announced. Komen has a lot to lose. It's turned the pink ribbon into an international brand behind billions in charitable donations. But Gregory Warner reports now from the health desk at WHYY in Philadelphia that this story put Big Pink, as it's called, under the microscope.
That pink ribbon wasn't always pink. It started out salmon-colored. Then the marketers got on the case.
Focus groups revealed that pink is soothing and feminine and uplifting, and so the pink ribbon was born.
Karuna Jagger of Breast Cancer Action says the pink may be too soothing, the symbol that blesses everything from Kentucky Fried Chicken to tires to perfume to yogurt has become synonymous with saving women's lives. Big pink, she says, means don't ask where the money is going.
Komen has been incredibly successful in raising awareness of breast cancer, but they've pinkified everything.
Lucy Bernholz is a philanthropy expert and author. She says more than anything, the pink ribbon brand conveys trust. And if people or corporations move away from Susan G. Komen, it could mean a big hit to breast cancer funding. Or it could mean that donors ask tougher questions about research and mammograms and cancer rates.
If you're just buying a pink yogurt, you don't have to think that hard about this.
But if you're selling that yogurt, you might. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
I'm a student at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and I expect the economy to get better because I believe in our youth, and I know that we are hardworking people, and I think that in the next 4 years, we'll see a great change.
That was Sarah Sines here in Las Vegas. Coming up, building a business on the back of the housing boom.
You've got the wood, you've got the grass clippings, the plastics and the papers and the 2x4s.
But first, let's do the numbers. Well, just look what some hopeful jobs news can do. The Dow Jones Industrial Average approached heights it hasn't hit in 4 years. Today, the blue chip index climbed 156 points, 1.25%. 12,862. The NASDAQ is back to levels it reached during the dot-com craze. I'm going to say that one more time, the dot-com craze. Look out. The tech-oriented index bounced 45 points, more than 1.5%, finished at 29.05. That's its highest close in more than a decade. The S&P 500 closed up 19 points, just shy of 1.5%, 1344 the number. So go ahead and chalk up 5 straight winning weeks on Wall Street. Since Monday, the Dow added 1.6%. The NASDAQ piled on 3.2%. The S&P 500 gained 2.2% for the week that was. Investors are leaving the safe shelter of U.S. bonds now that stocks are paying off. The price of the 10-year T-note fell, pushed the yield to its highest level since November, 1.92%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. On February 6, 1911, the 40th U.S. President Ronald Reagan was born. Bet you didn't know he shares a birthday with Axl Rose. The Guns N' Roses frontman turns 50 on Monday. And for all of you Midwesterners missing snow this warm winter, you might want to head to Japan, where the annual Sapporo Snow Festival begins. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. This has been, as most weeks have been lately, a week of joint political and economic news. Probably going to be that way until November, honestly. So here for our weekly wrap of Wall Street and beyond, more beyond than usual this week, I'd say. We've got our New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore and Cardiff Garcia from the blog FT Alphaville live with us in our cozy little studios in New York City. Hey, guys.
Hi, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
All right. So let's see. Heidi, yes, you go first today. Jobs. You heard Mitchell. You heard Dims. Give me your gut.
Sure. Well, the thing is, these numbers are terrific, but we have to make sure that they don't take us away from the core numbers that are at the fault of what's going on in the economy, which is long-term unemployment. And that is not changing. So it's great to get these good numbers. We're seeing a lot more baby boomers employed. We're seeing more management positions. So we're seeing white-collar jobs. But if we don't address long-term unemployment, then we'll have wasted this whole opportunity to get this right.
Cardiff, cheer me up, man. Look at Wall Street today and explain why everybody's so happy if Heidi is so sad.
Well, I think maybe, like me, Heidi's become practiced at sort of finding the cloud and every silver lining after so many years of such bad growth. Look, I mean, there's good reason to be relieved about this report. All the underlying details were good. Finally, the unemployment rate is dropping for the right reason. More people are employed. But at the same time, you still need to add those caveats because the simple fact is that we need many more months like this. We need like 10 to 20 more months of reports like this before we've really started to address the sort of tragic and structural unemployment problem in the country in terms of the long-term unemployed. And so, yeah, we should all be relieved. This could have been a lot worse, and it was much better than expected. But January is a historically volatile month for this report. I think we need to, you know, we need to pause and make sure that this kind of thing continues for the next few months before we start, you know, cracking open any champagne bottles.
All right. Well, let's take a detour into policy of this whole thing then. And Heidi, you know, there's going to be somebody probably in Washington on Monday saying, hey, look, the unemployment rate's coming down. We don't need to extend the payroll tax cut. If you recall, there was that two-month deal at the end of the year. So what is this actually going to translate into in terms of what the government's trying to do for the economy?
Right. It takes the pressure off of all those things that we may still need. As a recovery goes, this is incredibly tenuous. And we shouldn't drop things like discussion of the payroll tax cut. Or in the case of the Federal Reserve, they may want to put more stimulus into the economy. And if this keeps up, they wouldn't. And it's not that we're so in the clear that we can leave those things behind. And that's what I mean about that false sense of security.
Mm-hmm. Cardiff, so I'm out here in Vegas today. You heard the housing story up at the top of the broadcast. Lots of news about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and the things they've been doing in the housing market. Treasury Secretary Geithner was making noises today about maybe winding them down. What happens now in housing if we still can't get any motion, any traction now that we're getting unemployment at least moving?
Well, in terms of Fannie and Freddie, I mean, I think the key element here is time, and their involvement in the housing market is still enormous. You can't unwind their involvement too quickly because there's still a huge source of demand for mortgages. So as far as that goes, I would really temper any expectations. In terms of the rest of the housing market, so Obama's latest initiatives are kind of expanding on his earlier ones. His mm-hmm. earlier ideas were pretty good ones, but they weren't very ambitious and they didn't really get a lot done. And the problem with the new ones is that some of them require legislative acts, which means that it's really unclear whether or not anything, you know, like their current versions are going to pass through Congress. I'd be very skeptical about it. So in terms of the housing market, I think it's really going to be contingent upon the economy recovering more quickly and vice versa. These two things feed on themselves.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm not, you know, I'm never optimistic, but you're right.
Come on, man. You got to lighten up. All right. Heidi, you got a half a minute. I was going to try to get out of here without talking about Greece, but I can't. What's going on there? And is there news of a deal anytime soon, do you think?
The short version, don't expect a deal anytime soon. The drop dead deadline is March 20th, and they'll probably keep going until the 11th literal hour.
All right. So here's my promise. We will not talk about Greece on the wrap anymore until the 20th of March. Heidi Moore in New York City, Cardiff Garcia from the blog FT Alphaville. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you, Kai.
Thanks, Kai.
All right. Have a good weekend.
You too.
I think our economy sucks.
2012 is starting a slow rise.
Very hopeful because I feel like we can only go up from here.
I am so optimistic and excited for the things that are going to happen.
I am hopeful that the economy will get better because I would like a job.
It's pretty good, right? I hope it gets better because I'd like a job. That was Samantha Bledsoe in Henderson, Nevada. Heather Soto, Don McConisher, Alex Epstein, and Jeffrey Moran in Las Vegas. The housing-induced recession here in Las Vegas happened, very roughly speaking, this way. Tourism slowed down. It slowed way down. So there were fewer casino jobs. There were fewer people coming, which meant not as much housing demand, which meant fewer construction jobs. A lot of those building jobs were done by Latinos. So over the past couple of decades, the number of Latinos in the Las Vegas area grew from 80,000 to 580,000. Some of those Latinos started businesses that succeeded while times were good and jobs were plentiful. So from Nevada Public Radio, Adam Burke has the story of an entrepreneur who thrived in the boom and is making it through the bust.
Norberto Madrigal was just 10 when his father brought home an old international pickup truck to start the family business.
I don't know where he got it, but all I know is that the thing barely ran, and he did his best to make it shine and look pretty.
Another problem, the truck had no sides on the back end, so Madrigal's father fashioned homemade sides from used plywood. He painted the plywood black and started hauling trash away from Las Vegas construction sites.
I mean, the thing probably had four or five gears, and it was only running on three gears, you know, high RPMs, and it would just grind, you know.
23 years later, Lunas Construction has over 100 vehicles. It hauls 125,000 tons of waste a year, and Madrigal's waste disposal business has basically turned into a recycling company.
This is where the magic happens. Trash comes in, cash comes out.
Inside a warehouse at the outskirts of Las Vegas, trash is spread out on conveyor belts where it's tumbled around and separated. A dozen workers fish out the valuable stuff.
You've got the wood, you've got the grass clippings, the plastics and the papers and the 2x4s.
This new $2 million facility came online last year. Now, Madrigal needs more business to support it.
We don't have that waste. We might as well close our doors because that's the only way we're going to pay for the lights to stay on.
During the housing boom, nearly all of what Lunas took in was construction waste. Now, just 20% of Lunas waste comes from construction sites. And the whole operation is leaner. By late 2010, the family had to lay off more than three-quarters of employees.
It's a horrible feeling to let people go, to know that they depend on you and they have expenses to pay. It's just a horrible feeling.
But Madrigal says many of the other Latino small business owners in Las Vegas have fared worse, especially entrepreneurs with close ties to the construction industry.
A lot of guys I haven't even heard from. I don't even know what happened with them. It's kind of like they just disappeared. They closed shop and they were probably ashamed and took their families with them and just took off to another state.
So Norberto Madrigal and his family continue their hunt for those valuable things that we throw away. One of his recent quests, traveling the world to find out everything he can possibly learn about used tires.
I went down south to Mexico, Nicaragua, China, to Taiwan. I mixed and matched the ideas that I found. And now, whether it's a bicycle tire or heavy equipment tire, it doesn't matter. I can get rid of any piece of tire. I can recycle all of them.
Lunas is making and selling ground tire rubber. It's extracting metal from steel-belted radials. And it now owns a special machine that slices the sidewalls off of tires. Madrigal says he can sell sidewalls for 8 cents a piece to a company in Mexico that'll turn tire rubber into sandals. In Las Vegas, I'm Adam Burke for Marketplace.
Currently unemployed, but I do feel the economy is getting better. Tourism is definitely up in Vegas, which is everything for us. And I feel like the whole nation is slowly but steadily moving in the right direction, finally.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
That last voice you heard was Tom Woodine out of Enterprise, Nevada. This final note today, tourism in Las Vegas, as we've noted, has taken a hit, and there are some signs it's coming back. A new venture in town aims to pull in some of those visitors by dipping into a little bit of history that locals may or may not be happy to be reminded about. The Mob Museum opens in a couple of weeks, officially the National Museum of Organized Crime and Law Enforcement. It's in the original federal building here, built in the 1930s in downtown Las Vegas, not far from the New Zappos headquarters, by the way. It's got all sorts of cool mafia things like John Gotti's suit and machine gun simulators. But the best part?
One of our premier exhibits is the wall from the warehouse where the St. Valentine's Day massacre took place.
Wait, so the actual wall?
That's the wall right there.
Wow.
So, and this, you know, I think really exemplifies the way in which this museum is really unique.
You can see the actual bullet holes. Museum director Jonathan Ullman gave us the tour. Fear not, he says, the G-Men get their fair share of the glory, too. Opens, by the way, February 14th, Valentine's Day. All right, we got to go. That's Marketplace from APM American Public Media. Today, the Dow up 156 points, about 1.25%. The NASDAQ up 45 points, 1.5%. The S&P 500 up 19, almost 1.5%. Thanks today to the staff here at KNPR in Las Vegas. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace's acting producer is Megan Larson. The executive producer of the broadcast is Deborah Clark. J.J. Yore is the vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you back in L.A. on Monday. Have yourselves a great weekend. This is APM. That's American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.